can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
To the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacy, and today we are having a bit of a face-off between the Ryans. That is, Ryan Reynolds versus Ryan Gosling. They're not actually going head-to-head. They don't know they're doing this, but I just decided that we should do two Ryan films because. So the first film is Deadpool 2, starring Ryan Reynolds. And this is very interesting for me because I actually have not seen the first Deadpool movie. I remember seeing the previews for the first one when it came out, and I thought it looked interesting. I thought it looked sort of funny with the sarcasm. But then I didn't see it for some reason, and I was just like, you know what, I'm okay. I don't feel a super loss if I haven't seen this, and from what I've heard, it sounds like it might be a bit beyond my comfort level of people being killed and how people are killed, and something terrible, I believe, happens to Ryan Reynolds' character, and that's how he gets his powers, and yeah, no, I'm good. But then in seeing the previews for Deadpool 2, there was the character of Domino, who's introduced, whose superpower is luck. And if you've seen the previews, you've probably seen that argument where she's arguing with Deadpool over whether or not luck is a power. And he's like, no, it isn't. And she's like, yes, it is. And he's like, well, let's just meet in the middle and say, no, it isn't. And I was like, you know what? Assuming luck is a power, because I'll go with that assumption. How do you portray that in a film? It's not something you can use as an offense, right? It's not like an offensive power the way you can blast someone with lightning like Storm, or levitate them. Like, how do you use luck as a power in a superhero battle? Yes, I am intrigued enough to want to see this film solely for Domino. I don't even care what the storyline's about. And I actually didn't know until shortly before seeing this, when the first Deadpool was on TV somewhere, that Marina Baccarin is in it. And I was like, hey, you know what? I liked Firefly enough that I'd like to see more about that. But no, solely for Domino. I really just want to see how the filmmakers are going to do luck as a power. So yes, Domino is a side character in this film. It's obviously Deadpool's film, but the main storyline is that there is a young mutant named Russell who has the ability to sort of control fire. He shoots fire from his hands, and Deadpool ends up meeting Russell after he's suffered a bit of a tragedy and finds himself eventually feeling protective of Russell, who is in danger. And I won't reveal too much more beyond that. So he puts together a superpower team. I believe he calls them X-Force, which I believe is an actual group from the comics. Comic book readers, let me know. Puts together this group of superpowers to protect and save Russell so that he won't be killed. And so that's where we get the scene in the previews with them arguing over whether or not luck is a power, because Domino has come almost, it's a bit like a job interview meets an audition. These different mutants they have headshots with resumes for some reason, and they're giving it then. It's like, okay, tell me about yourself, tell me about your power or whatever. You know, why should we take you into this team? And it's just like, okay. And yes, puts together this team and they go on their adventures with their wisecracking selves, and we go from there. It was this film. So I saw a lot of articles, and a lot of them kept calling Deadpool the Merc with the Mouth, which I guess must be, if not an official nickname, like one we got in the comic books or something, because almost every article I saw called him that. I was like, okay, got it. Yeah, there he's got a mouth. Definitely a lot of sarcasm going on here. There's a lot of just sort of like, there is nothing, you know, considered really holy in this film. Like, even from the beginning, he starts and he breaks the fourth wall a lot. He looks at the camera quite a bit. It starts with him narrating, you know, how he got here and what the story is setting up. So he's definitely talking to the audience and seems to kind of be aware he's in a movie. He does actually even mention at some points, even our movie or whatever. So there's that. But he starts with even Deadpool 2 is a family film. Every family film starts with a vicious murder. And it's just like, and he names off like Bambi and Lion King. And it's like, yeah, but you're not wrong. But okay, so it's going to be that sort of film. And you can definitely get the feel from it just in the first 10, 15 minutes of, okay, yes, this is that sort of film. People get killed and you see people get killed somewhat. We're not hiding too much. This is definitely not a film if you're squeamish. Definitely do not go see this film if, like, you have a hard time with... It's not, you know, reveling in people getting killed, but it's definitely not hiding from it. There's some people getting sort of chopped, diced, sliced, cut by blades, cut by fast-moving blades happens. There were a number of times where I sort of turned my head from the screen and closed my eyes, which didn't help too much because you did still get the sound effects, but I was like, I can't watch. And there was a couple behind me in their 20s, and the guy kept laughing at those scenes, and I was just like, I guess you're sort of the like ideal audience for this film, but I'm a little troubled at some of the things you're laughing at. Not that I didn't laugh in this film, because again, he's very sarcastic and you have to sort of, some of the quips are really quick that you don't quite catch them until later and we've moved on a bit. And it's like, oh, you just said, oh, wow, I can't believe you just said that. Okay, then. All right. So, yeah, it's an R-rated film. Yeah. Take that into consideration. If you are a parent of a child who wants to see this and you've let them see some R-rated things before, you might want to question this one, or you might want to go with them, because it definitely earns that R rating. It's not for children or those who are easily offended. It's sort of... It's weird. I know Deadpool is part of the sort of X-Men canon, and Ryan Reynolds originally played the role in one of the Wolverine films, the one that we all kind of pretend doesn't exist because it wasn't that great. So he does have this sort of tie-in with the X-Men, and there's this whole thing over all the different comic book characters that were in Marvel comic books but aren't owned by the same studio, so they can't all be in the same film, which is why you saw when we had Avengers 2 come out at the same time as X-Men Days of Future Past, there are two different versions of Quicksilver because those are two different studios and they both have the right to use the character because the character is in multiple teams, and it starts getting confusing. There's a number of things that sort of felt like, oh wait, we're not in that other film, but I thought we, because it felt like we were in this other film. So when Deadpool first meets Russell, he and Russell end up going to prison together, and there is a special mutant prison, because of course there must be, you can't put mutants with regular prisoners, they'd easily escape and or kill everybody. But this prison felt quite a bit like the prison from the first Guardians of the Galaxy film. It kind of looked like it, and in the same way, if you remember that prison, the prison cells are like, they have glass window doors or something. You can see into the cells very easily from like the hallway, and there's like no privacy, and that's how this prison feels. It's like, it's just several different glass plastic boxes that the prisoners are put in, and that's, and all the, there's this sort of, when they first enter the prison, A, evidently people in prison do actually say new fish, which I thought was just a Shawshank Redemption thing, but they do call them new fish. But then B, there's that sort of like taunting to see who's the bigger prison dog. I don't know the terms there. And they're walking with their bedrolls, and it feels a lot like that first scene where the guardians walk into that first prison and everyone's, you know, yelling at Gamora because she's a murderer. But then that one guy sort of comes and picks on Peter Quill, and then Rocket and Groot, you know, sort of set things down of, this is our booty, you can't mess. It felt that sort of sizing up of each other, and we're all extremely dangerous in this prison, and I immediately know something's going to go wrong, or we're going to break out, because I already know that happened in Guardians of the Galaxy, and this feels so much like that, that I assume that's what's going to happen, and it kind of does. So I'm like, yeah, okay, I kind of get sometimes where we're going, because this feels very familiar with other worlds, but then Deadpool being Deadpool is like, I don't respect anything. And so it goes off a bit on its own style of things. There's certain things where it's like, yeah, that would be treated much more respectfully, reverently, what have you, in a different superhero movie. And in this one, oh, that's how that character gets to be. Okay. But yeah, it was funny at times. And Domino is actually my favorite character in the movie. I also do like Marina Baccarin's Vanessa, but we don't see a lot of her. And Deadpool's off on this whole other quest with all these other mutants, and Vanessa's not there. But yeah, I don't quite, because I didn't see the first one, I don't quite know who the side characters are, like the taxi driver and the bar owner and the blind lady with the gun. I'm a little confused on who they are and how we know them and why we go to them. But just going on of this is sort of his crew and we're all idiotic or something. Just going on with that, it was quite a bit fun to watch. Domino and the way they do luck, it's actually pretty well done. Again, luck is a... Again, if you try and imagine how would you portray luck as a power, and you actually come up with something, please let me know on social media, because I've still struggled, even after seeing this film, to kind of visualize how you would do luck as an offensive power. You kind of really can't. She's just sort of a really good sort of kick-butt female who just happens also to be really lucky. And she knows that she's lucky and can use it and sort of doesn't worry about things, but she's not completely relying on it. She still totally does go in and get her hands dirty and has no problem like going in and fighting people. So it's not like she just stands still and expects things to somehow work for her. It's not like that. So it works pretty well because it's portrayed, I guess, believably. Like when you see the first action scene that we get with her, which is a bit in the trailers where she sort of drops into this truck, and then the things that happen on that truck, it's like, you know what? Yeah, I can totally believe that that's how that play out with luck, you know, working as it does. And then later when they track Russell to the school where he was raised, there's a scene where she says something and then it immediately happens. And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, she didn't do that on purpose. She didn't know that was going to happen, but that's of course how luck works. So I can go with it. And I do want to see more of her if they make another Deadpool. It's not clear that they're going to, and Ryan Reynolds has said he couldn't quite see what the point would be. But if they do, I would definitely want to see more of Domino. I just didn't like the ending. There's a sort of last set, the last third or so, when they finally get to the school, even with the way they do the thing that Domino says being believable, the rest of it's kind of a little unbelievable. Like, it feels a bit of a stretch that this battle isn't over sooner, and that this thing we're trying to stop from happening hasn't happened by like the time we get there, because we arrive after the fact. It's like, yeah, so that person should totally have been killed on like the first attack. How are they still alive, and why is this still going? This goes on for a bit longer than you might expect, and there's actually a point where Deadpool's talking that also goes on a bit more than you might expect. And it's just like, okay, that's played well because it's Deadpool. But the action is just a little too much. And again, it's a superhero movie and we have to have big bang, explosive, punchy action scenes for some reason. But we could have done this a little quicker. But overall, fun movie, funny movie. If you've got a certain sense of humor, cool movie to watch if you're not too squeamish. R-rated film for a certain demographic of people. Just keep that in mind. So we're going to take a short break and then come back with our other Ryan. So stay tuned.
Want to know the latest and hottest music hitting the airwaves? Don't be left out. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Music Podcast. Keith keeps you on the loop with everything you need to know from pop, rock, hip-hop, and the top 40. And we'll throw in news of your favorite artists, concert and tour dates, and so much more. Listen no further, because this is the Gold Standard in Music Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second film today, and I didn't realize this when I first selected it because I was only thinking about the Ryans, but this film is also a sequel in that it is Blade Runner 2049, which is the sequel that took much longer to get to than Deadpool 2 of the original Blade Runner, where Harrison Ford is hunting down robots who are hard to tell from humans. So if you haven't seen that first Blade Runner, you might be a bit confused in this one because it takes a lot of what we originally set up from that first one and builds off it. It doesn't explain things as much in the second one because it's a sequel. So if you don't already know, you know, what's the premise of Blade Runner and what it is with replicants and what that means and the sort of themes we were dealing with in the first one of whether or not replicants have the right to live the way humans live or should they just automatically be killed because they're robots, you might be a bit lost in this one. And unfortunately, there's these captions that show up a couple of times, first at the beginning and then a scene, maybe two scenes in the middle when we sort of go to a new location we haven't really set up, that kind of are trying to explain. There's the start where they explain sort of the setup and how the corporation that was in the first film has folded and there's now this new corporation that's doing things a bit different, but we still have replicants. And if you haven't seen that, those captions only sort of set the scene, assuming you know the basics of the Blade Runner world. So if you don't, it's just like that's not helpful enough to fully explain what's going on. Likewise, this new film, I can't remember when the original Blade Runner was set, but it's not veering too much from it. It's not like we've gone a long, long time into the future. I believe we're only supposed to be about 30 years or so from the previous one. So that would make it, I guess, 2019 or so. But it didn't create this whole new thing of the way you sort of see with some of the Star Wars, where we were in the olden times and the new times and technology changed quite a bit. That's not the case. It's still pretty similar to the original. There's not too much that's been added that would throw people off, except for maybe one thing, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But so it was good for that. And when you first start, it's a sort of immediate, even though we don't completely spell it out, who Ryan Gosling's character is and what he does and the fact that this is the sequel. You kind of could have guessed he'd be in a very similar position to Harrison Ford's original character. But even then, they do throw in sort of just as asides statements about replicants, like only older models run and we were harder to spot back then, showing that replicants are a bit more out in the open now. And not only that, we're aware of it. So one of the things that was interesting in the first film was that there was a replicant who wasn't aware they were a replicant, and possibly more than one replicant who wasn't aware they were replicants. So in this one, that's not the thing. We've moved past that. replicants are completely aware we're not hiding. We use them as other replicant hunting police forces. It's much more just set as it is without as much mystery. There's a totally different mystery in this one, which I won't spoil. However, because it's seen as just sort of not passe, but a sort of everybody knows that with replicants, it's a little hard at times to figure out who's human and who's replicant. We get that there are replicants and they know they're replicant, and presumably the humans they're working with or around also know they're replicants, but we, the audience members, might not know. So there's talk in this a couple of times about children and children being adopted. And at one point, Ryan Gosling's character, who's named Kay, goes to what looks to be like a futuristic version of the workhouse from Oliver. There are seriously a whole bunch of children doing some sort of work of taking things apart or scrap metal or something. And there's a terrible man who's yelling at them to work faster. And I was like, I half expect one of these children to stand up and say, please, sir, I want some more. Doesn't happen. But it's sort of that. And these children theoretically are up for adoption and or sale. It seems like the guy might also just totally be willing to sell them to you. And it was a little confusing whether or not those children were human or not, because of the way we talk about replicants very easily. It's like, okay, but are some of these children replicants? Can you have children? Do replicants grow? Aren't they just the way they're formed and then they live however many years they've been programmed to and then they die? And we do see early in the film one just sort of come out of a bag, sack, something as a full-grown human. So it appears that they're always completely grown, but then it's not clear if the children are or not because of why we're there and who's there. So it's a little confusing. Like, we have Robin Wright's character, who I'm pretty sure is human. But there's other people on the team that Kay works with, and I'm like, are they all human? Are some of them replicants? We're just not going to fully explain that and not make it clear. Okay, move on. There is a new sort of... The story is like the original Blade Runner with a slight twist. So Ryan Gosling's Kay is like Harrison Ford's Deckard. He hunts down replicants, rogue replicants. And Harrison Ford had the character Rachel, who sort of made him question things. And Ryan Gosling's Kay has Joy. Except Joy is a hologram program. And the way they do Joy is quite interesting. We first meet her. He comes back to his apartment. And why do replicants even have apartments? Why do replicants have apartments and need food? And why do we give them memories? Which is sort of the whole setup of this, is that replicants have memories. And are those memories real or not? Why would you need a replicant with memories? Because it makes them more human or something. But if you... Yeah, a lot of philosophical questions going on in the Blade Runner world. But anyways, with Joy, we first get him where he comes home to his apartment. And he seems to be talking to just like a speaker, like Alexa or something with a bigger personality, and then we see it's a hologram who is sort of set up to be his girlfriend or something, and they're definitely having a relationship, even though she's obviously not real and he's aware of that, but she kind of wants to be real and he kind of wants her to be real. And that, I thought that relationship was the best thing about the film. It really sort of plays with your emotions at times. And even though we've got the whole philosophical thing about replicants versus humans and can they ever be human or be equal to human and should we treat them equally, there is also this other side with Kay and Joy of beyond just living and being free to live, of wanting the same things that humans do with love and affection and a relationship. And the way that plays out with Joy is... it's very sweet and tender, and there's a great scene, possibly the best scene, and I'll just call it the sinking scene, not sinking like a ship, sinking like sink your iPhone, but the sinking scene with Joy and Kay and this other replicant, named Mariette, who I actually had to look up because it is played by the actress who plays Tully in the new Charlize Theron movie. And I completely missed it if ever they said her character's name in this film. So I just kept totally thinking of her as Tully in my mind. And she's actually kind of Tully-ish at times because she is a replicant prostitute. And so she thinks about things in a more sort of free, don't follow the rules as much sort of way as Tully did in that film. And so it was very hard to keep her separate in my mind. I was just like, it's Tully. Tully's not a replicant, moving on. But in this scene, A, technologically speaking, they could not have done this in the first film. It would not have looked anywhere near as good. It would have taken a lot more out of the filmmakers to try and figure out how to do it and do it properly with the technology and the timing and everything. It looks fantastic. But B, because it's dealing with this relationship between Kay and Joy, who have feelings for each other but can't get to each other because he's a replicant and she's a hologram and this can't ever fully be realized, it just really sort of socks you in the gut, like seeing what they have to go through and this sort of compromise we have to make to have what we want, to have what it seems everybody else can just easily have. And then what we see happens later with Joy is just sort of heartbreaking almost. And then, well, it's heartbreaking, but it's also frustrating. Because once we get to the scene where we finally do meet Harrison Ford's character, and that's not a spoiler because he's on the poster. So yes, Harrison Ford is in this film. Once we finally get to Harrison Ford, him with just Ryan Gosling is okay, but then other characters come in and it's sort of just, it's not like it goes downhill per se, but it doesn't live up to everything that it felt like it was setting up from the rest of the movie that had preceded it. It feels a bit not even anticlimactic, because there is a interesting ending the way things end, but it just feels sort of like, oh, that's how we, like the first one at least sort of ended with hope. This one ends with not hope and not despair. There is sort of a kind of hope for the replicants, but you don't get sort of what you want for many of the characters. It sort of makes you, it made me at least angry at the filmmakers, like, how dare you play with my emotions that way and then end this way. And there's actually a strange turn going on with another replicant, Love, who is sort of one of the main antagonists in this film. And you can kind of tell that when you first meet her, she seems very cold and precise and very clearly not human. But then as the movie goes on, she kind of turns not quite psychopathic, but I did not think she would be that physically out to kill everybody as she is. And it's just like, where did the cool cold ice queen robot from the first scene go? Because I feel somewhere this character, like maybe you entered a totally different screenwriter, the first screenwriter had to go somewhere, and so the second one came in and decided the character was too boring, so we're gonna completely change that. Like, what the heck, just how did we get here? And Jared Leto is in this film playing, he plays sort of the new Tyrell. He's Wallace, who is the head of the corporation that took over from the previous corporation in the film. But he's his own version of dangerously minded. And he has this thing going on with his eyes where it seems he's, I guess, blind and uses technology to see. But it's not clear why you would do that in this world where you can totally create entire humans out of nowhere. You should definitely have eyes on your own. So what? But yeah, his character just, it felt very, in the same way that the Love character feels like you totally changed it. His character felt like you just couldn't figure out how to end it with him. And so he just, I think he's maybe alive at the end of the film. I'm really not sure what happened to Jared Leto's character at the end of this film, but it felt just sort of, we didn't finish with him. We didn't finish with him. And the way we finished with the other characters is just sort of disappointing. And then the final ending we get that we're supposed to sort of give us hope or feel this was all worth it, just sort of maybe for the good of all mankind, but not necessarily for the characters we came to care about in this film. So how should I feel at the end of this? I'm not sure. So yeah, not a terrible film, not a terrible sequel to the original Blade Runner. I did not even actually like the original Blade Runner, but that was probably because it was super confusing for me when I first watched it. But now having the background of that one and then watching this one, I like it for like 2/3 of the movie. And I really, really like the relationship with Kay and Joy. But then the last third just sort of doesn't live up to my hopes. And so I was disappointed. So yes, on that note, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment and even